I'm Matt Godbolt.
And I'm Ben Rady.
And this is To's Compliment, a programming podcast. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Matt.
So, we were looking at the problem with our SSL certificate for twoscompliment.org. In other words, you know, we wanted to be able to like host from just twoscompliment.org, not www.twoscompliment.org, which sounds straightforward. And through the miracle of podcasting, we recorded that many weeks ago, our sort of attempts to fix it, but we never quite got there. Right. And so I figure we should probably finish the job, try and get it so that our website's actually working. Mm-hmm. And everyone can laugh at how much we've forgotten between what may be back-to-back episodes as far as our listener is concerned, but what for us, a month has passed.
Mm-hmm. The fact that you think we're going to get this fixed today is very ambitious, and I like that. I like that attitude.
Well, we've got half an hour or so. Let's give it a go.
Let's see how far we can get at least.
So we had a whole bunch of Terraform-y stuff was how we left it.
So right now, if I remember this correctly, our plan was to create an AWS Route 53 domain.
Yep.
And then change the domain to use like the wildcard certificates?
I think so. Yeah, we can use a wildcard cert, or at least a cert that has multiple hosts listed, one of which could be a wildcard. But it could just have www and the no domain, which I believe is what Compiler Explorer does, but I can't remember. I think actually Compiler Explorer has like empty and star dot godbot.org or whatever.
So I have right now, okay, so looking at this, so we had kind of terraformed some of this up before. And right now there is a certificate that we have for www.twoscompliment.org, and there's a little to-do here that should be that says should be just twoscompliment.org, and then I have another little to-do here that says subject alternative names equals and then square brackets quote star.twoscompliment.org.
Right.
And I have a little bit of for each magic in the Route 53 record that I think attempts to create a record for each of the things that it sees in the certificate. And I have this, I think, because I have done this once before.
I've gotten
this to work. And I copy-pasted some of that in here. But now I have zero memory
of how it will all fit together.
Of how it even got here, let alone how it works. So this is what happens when you put things down for a month and then
don't pick them up again. Right.
Right. Let me go check. I have a project on my GitHub that I think this maybe came from. So let me go see if that is even remotely true.
And if so, we can crimp from that.
Yeah. And I guess I should try tastypenny.com. And that does work and it is secure. So I have done this on that site. Yeah, my recipe tracking website called Tasty Penny. I have done this.
Tasty Penny.
It's Tasty Penny. Yeah. I don't even know where is that thing. Yeah, you know, it's like all recipe websites are terrible
because it's all like they're not really recipe said websites. They're advertising websites that are trying to put as many adverts between the obvious thing you want, which is the damn recipe.
Right, and try to, you know, get enough SEO from the text that they're putting on there about like, oh, I traveled to Paris 3 years ago and I had this wonderful, you know, whatever. But yeah, I can't even find, am I like not logged in? Oh, I'm logged in as, yes, okay, that's what's going on there. I'm not.
Oh, you're
can't
on
see
AWS
my private
right
repositories.
Now. Oh, no, I see you're logged to GitHub.
I'm trying to find where this stuff came from, so I'm going to GitHub, but I'm logged in as a different user, so I can't see my
private repositories. Whoa, you have more than one user?
I do. I have an aquatic user for my official aquatic things. And then
I see.
Oh, me, which is less official.
You're less official. You're not the official Ben Rady.
I am not the official Ben Rady. I'm just the casual Ben Rady.
I see.
Okay. So yes, Tasty Penny. Here's some Terraform. It says site. And yes, I think that is exactly where that came from, because that looks very similar, except some commented out stuff.
Before we get too excited, if I go to Tasty Penny, or if I could type tastypenny.org, com, no www, it is working. No ads, no junk, just tasty, apparently, is is the little byline for this. And
right.
Connection is secure, it says, and certificate is valid, and the common name is tastypenny.com, and there you go. And looking at the... Yeah, you just got a certificate, and it only mentions tastypenny.com in this certificate. Now I'm going to go to www.tastypenny.com, and connection is secure, cookies, all the things. Maybe it redirected me then.
It might have.
I see, but obviously in the interim, it served up something which did not upset my browser in terms of
security.
You could curl
it if you wanted to know for sure.
I certainly could, but yeah, that's awesome. All right. So this is going to be a good thing to crib from, because it works.
Right.
That's what I'm checking is, like, before we get all excited and changing it, let's just see we're heading the right way.
Uh-huh.
And I will curl it.
Yeah.
Actually,
when I do a curl-v, I see server certificate, subject, CN, Tasty Penny, start date, expire date, which is in May. Okay, well, keep that in mind. And then
picking up rocks.
Subject, alt name, host, www.tastypenny.com, match, certs, star, tastypenny.com.
Perfect. Okay, so that's a good
issue or Amazon
analog then of that. And we know what to look for when we do it for Two's compliment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, the question with this is, how do you fix the airplane while it's in the middle of the air? And I would hate to, apply some Terraform change here that all of a sudden makes our podcast disappear for, 24 hours or however long the DNS is poisoned or whatever
That's true.
Be,
So how about this? Can we make a change straight away to change the TTL of the DNS down to like 2 days and just apply exactly as is, but with a really low TTL, which means that already, or like 2 hours, which means that we're starting to promote the idea that we're going to screw this up and we want to be able to undo it, right?
Yes.
A good friend of mine once told me that if you can't test it properly, then at least make it cheap to roll back.
Okay. That sounds like that guy was making shit up as he went along. okay. Let's see here. So right now the Route 53 record is set to 60, which is in seconds, right?
Oh.
Right?
I think so.
Right?
So we might be DNS is its own mystery.
I don't think that currently AWS is the name server for Two's compliment.
That means that we can make all the changes we like here and just use NSLookup with the server being, or host, or dig, or whatever the cool kids use these days, and test that it's doing the right thing.
Right.
So right now,
how would we confirm that that is true?
I'm going to do NSLookup, and I'm going to do set type equals any, and I'm going to do Two's, and sorry for my offensively loud keyboard, twoscomplement.org. And it tells me, non-authoritative answer, name server is ns2.hover.com. And blah, 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 blah. And then address is 216.40.34.41, whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Now,
beautiful.
If I were to set the server to be, do you happen to have a AWS DNS IP there?
Let me go see if I can do that. One moment, please.
And meanwhile, I'm looking at the Tasty Penny website going, this looks great.
I have some updates I want to make to it. I want to make it a little bit more tablet friendly, because it's not right now, but it has some good recipes on it. I want to sign into the console. I don't know if you got this thing recently where I finally had to separate my Amazon.com, you know,
shopping yeah.
password and my AWS password
yeah.
to a reminder of, like, it used to be that Amazon was a bookstore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it is pretty bonkers. At one stage, actually, I had a problem where I enabled two-factor authentication on one or other of the two. And it affected the other, even though they were supposedly independent. I think there's still some link between the two. They're different account names now. And that was the one and only time I ever spoke to an Amazon person on the phone while they were trying to reset it. Oh, this is an interesting problem. I'm like, yes, yes, it is. I can't log into either, and this is kind of panicking me right now.
All this
padding, yeah. Has that allowed you to find the IP address of...
Yes. So... I have the two's complement name servers.
Yep.
There's four of them.
Any one will do.
Let's go ns-68.awsdns-08.com.
Wow. That's a beautiful thing. Oh, so it has an IPv6 address. There you are. That's crazy. Okay, so now I've just said server that, and I'm typing two's complement. mint.org again, and now it tells me the name servers are, now I can see the other DNS servers at Amazon, which are like NS1150 and 1600, all this kind of crazy things, and apparently it has an address of 202.251.192.68 is what it's resolving to, which is that the alias to the load balancer?
Yeah, it's a CloudFront distribution. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna look up. No, yeah, it doesn't. Oh wait, it's refusing me. Let me do this on another one. Host 205.251.192.68. Oh, that says NS68 AWS DNS. I mean, it could be the same IP addresses for all I know. So yeah, we need to look up what the CloudFront distribution is set to, just to see it. Obviously, this is just us testing the water here. Like, this should all work out. But while you do that, what this means is, CloudFront is essentially a caching proxy in front of all of the AWS infrastructure. And when one creates one tells it where to get the information from that it's going to be proxying and edge caching. And it gives you a sort of a unique distribution name, and then that maps to an IP address or a DNS that you then use to point your web services at, and then whatever you land on knows how to serve up from CloudFront your web server, your web traffic, your web whatever.
So I have a ARN, I have a distribution name, but I'm having a hard time finding
what is the distribution
address
name.
Oh wait, no, maybe this is, maybe
I think
this
it is, and I think it might actually be a full FQDN.
I mean, the distribution name is a... Okay, yeah, I think I do. Yeah, okay. This is going to be a little painful. Are you
okay,
ready for
then
this?
All right. Well, maybe, yeah, go on. Is it AS something or other?
It's a big long string of characters .cloudfront.net.
Okay. So, if you've got that in your console, why don't you copy that and just do host space that and see if you get an IP address that looks like this one? And then that would sort of confirm. While you do that, I'm going to look up at www.twoscomplement.org.
I see 54.230.18.99,
okay.
54.230.1849, 54.230.1882,
54.230.1869. Got it. None of those match because I've just realized that NS Lookup was giving me a bad answer. It tried to connect and it got timeout. And then what it's doing is it's just telling me all about the domain. There is no record associated with twoscomplement.org. So that's what we need to fix.
Okay.
There's also no A record associated with www.twoscomplement.org.
Right, because isn't there not going to be? Isn't it going to be this, like, different kind? What is the name of that type of DNS record that's, like...
It's
not specific to Amazon, but it's, like...
Well, it's called sort of alias around. So, like, the underlying
record,
problem
right?
here is that there is no such thing, really. As much as people would love there to be, there is no such thing in DNS as a CNAME, which is what we really want for the the naked domain. Like, so what you might mm-hmm. want is www dot whatever to be the address of a machine, and then if someone puts in the thing without the www, you say, hey, this mm-hmm. is the same as www dot, which mm-hmm. is a CNAME, a kind of a symbolic link, if you like, mm-hmm. at the DNS level. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you can't have a CNAME record for a naked domain itself. You have to have an A record. And the problem mm-hmm. with that is that the CNAME actually needs to point at the CloudFront distribution because Amazon want to move it around. They want to change it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what typically happens is that DNS providers will have a product where they track the DNS entry for the CloudFront end that you've got, and they'll just keep periodically changing your A record. But Amazon natively supports this, so we should just be able to configure it. So I think we're just missing the configuration in the Terraform, and an application should just make this work here without affecting the Realtors complement at all, because it's still being served up by hover.com.
Right, right, right. So I'm actually looking at this now, and this makes sense to me, which is I've actually got some commented out stuff in this Terraform that does, I think, exactly that. And that is what my TastyPenny Terraform does. And looking at my TastyPenny configuration in Route 53, I can see an A record there that is a very strange looking A record, because the value of it is that big long list of characters .cloudfront.net, right? Well, not the same.
Oh, that's interesting.
For,
yeah.
And that is for the www one and for the sort of bare domain.
Yeah, that sounds
so. That to me seems
plausible.
Like Amazon, you know, doing an A record, you know,
trick behind the scenes. I'm going to have a very quick look at how I did this for some other website that I'm involved in. Route53.tf. Where the hell are this stuff? I actually have modules for this because it's so awful that I have so many stupid things. Main.tf. Okay. I set a CNAME, and the records are something like Route 53's address, a.fqdn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of looking up somewhere else. This is obviously makes for great radio. Zone ID, alias, name. Yeah, okay. It looks like it's an alias that I'm setting. So I do for both the A record and the AAAA record. Mm-hmm. I have an alias stanza inside of the Terraform itself. So it's not an address record, even though it could be. And it has a name, a zone ID, and some other bits and pieces in it. And I don't know if that corresponds to the thing that you're looking at now.
Yeah, I think that is. I think we're looking at the same thing here.
So I've got, alias name equals, and then I've got a variable which holds the CloudFront distribution dot domain name. And then another thing that's CloudFront distribution dot hosted zone ID. And that essentially configures the A and the AAAA for the top level name, which is, in my case, you know, godbolt.org or godbo.lt or compilerexplorer.com for all the times it's instantiated, which is like the for each that you've got. But I think mm-hmm. we only need one of these. So you could probably just write it out longhand right now.
Yeah. Well, I think this would actually just work if the certificate was the – if I switched – so kind of parsing through this now and having some vague memory of what we did here. I think this will all work if – we can just change this certificate to be a wildcard certificate. So if I were to change that in the Terraform and then try to run it, what would it just replace the existing certificate with a wildcard certificate?
I think so. Okay. I have some magic to do that too, if needs be. So why don't we try that?
Let's give that a try.
Okay. What could go wrong?
Right. Well, in theory, people could start getting certificate errors going to Two's complement, because I do think that this is the real certificate.
This one will be the real certificate, yes. The DNS can do whatever it likes, but we're about to tell CloudFront to use a different certificate when it's pretending to be us.
Yes, which is probably why I stopped here.
I mean, YOLO. Let's do it. Did you make a new certificate, actually? You already made a certificate.
Well, I was going to... I mean, can... Okay, wait a second. Stop. If I change this Terraform, it's not going to make a new certificate. I have to go and do it Manueli.
I don't remember if you... I mean, you can absolutely have certificates created in Terraform 2. I don't know if... Did we do that last time?
Okay, well, let's do this. Let's start by making the change in the Terraform and doing a Terraform plan and seeing what Terraform
says. What the heck it thinks? yes. Always a good start. Where are we now? Is what I have on my computer an accurate representation of what the cloud provider thinks I've got?
Right. Well, I mean, so I did this once and it said it was up to date, but I'm going to change it. And now we're going to do a plan again. And then we're going to see what Terraform says about what it feels like it wants to change. And I'm going to make this look very much like the existing one that I have for my recipe project.
Right.
Okay.
And I found the certificate stanza that I have for my site so we can steal from if needs be.
Okay. So I'm going to do Terraform plan.
Yep. What does it say? It say refreshing.
It says 3 to add, 1 to change, 2 to destroy. And so it is going to... Yeah, say AWS ACM certificate 2's complement.org must be replaced.
Awesome. Okay. Because you've changed the subject alternative names in there, right?
I changed the subject alternative names, and I also changed the domain name from www.2scomplement.org to 2scomplement.org.
Perfect.
And then it says AWS CloudFront distribution, S3 distribution will be updated in place.
Yep.
And then it says... AWS Route 53 2scomplement.org /*2scomplement.org will be created.
Yep.
And then another Route 53 record for 2scomplement.org will be created.
That sounds good to me. Let's do it. What could go wrong? Let's get a list.
Many things.
All right.
So do I have an apply? I do have a Terraform apply. All right. Firing the rockets.
Firing the rockets.
If we wanted to troll our audience, we should cut off the audio in the middle of this apply. It's like, wait a second, that doesn't
yeah
doesn't work like that.
Well, ironically, right, your internet destroying. Just glitched then for me, so I'm like, oh. He's joking about the connection going down, and then I'm like, you froze on my screen.
Oh, man.
Which was epic trolling in its own right.
All right. Says destroying, still destroying, still destroying.
Still destroying. It's destroying all everything. The things.
Oh, and we got an error.
All right. Is there some create before destroy thing that I've got
no,
in mind?
No, this is a access say? Denied. Not authorized to perform ACM request certificate. So is where we go into the IAM console and we... give this service user that we're running ads a whole bunch of permissions that it shouldn't probably have, and then we dial them back later.
Far too clever. I just have.
I don't actually manage the. I know I don't know. I don't manage the IAM in here. Okay, so where is this user? Tasty Penny. And we're gonna attach a permission, and this is gonna be. What is the name of this service? Certificate something? AWS certificate. I think it's this one.
Right.
I don't even know. Who knows? AWS certificate manager private?
Yeah, this is outside of my purview of understanding.
Well,
it's not even the right word.
We'll try this one.
Yeah.
And see what happens. If this doesn't work, then we'll remove that. We'll take that out. You know, if it ain't fixed, don't break it.
If it don't leave it broken, more broken. The programming by coincidence thing, I think we've talked. Have we talked about that before?
Maybe not.
Yeah. Maybe not.
Maybe we have not. Yeah, so that didn't do it. So I'm removing the policy because that did not fix the problem. So I don't want to create a whole other problem by putting something in there that wasn't in there before. AWS certificate. So this guy should have this already. ACM.
The AWS Association of Computer Machinists.
Yeah.
No, not that.
What? What? Oh, I guess I can go and look at this actually and see what it is. Yeah. This user, I thought.
Are you the right user, though?
It's a different user. I'm an idiot. I'm looking at the Tasty Penny user.
Which clearly does
work. Which already works. Yeah. Like, this already.
This is the one that works.
I guess I should have thought of that before. It's like, you have a user that does this. Go look at what they do. I thought, I'm a doofus. I think I was maybe thrown off by the fact that the user that I have for this has the original podcast name.
Oh,
did we talk about the original?
I don't think
podcast
we've talked about
it.
Oh my golly, this is all these things.
Yeah,
programming bike. I should be taking notes.
All right, certificate.
Give me all your certificates. I belong to us. Oh, and I've just gotten
certificate manager.
I don't know if this is certainly completely off topic, but I've just been given the okay to push an update to Compiler Explorer, which I will do in the background of this. So the tapping noises will be me pushing a kind of cool thing to Compiler Explorer.
Okay, we're creating a certificate.
All right. That's cool.
That's a good sign.
I'm pushing Compiler Explorer 6.7.25 to production from the staging environment. Unrelated to this podcast, but you know, we're both tapping away at keyboards, and we've got to fill the air with talking of some description.
So it's interesting to talk about how we would do this if this were not just our hobby podcast.
Yes.
Right? So, because right now we are literally testing this in production. Right, I've heard is a bad idea.
We've all seen the meme, the most interesting man in the world meme. You know, with him with his little bear going. You know, I don't often do testing, but when I do, I do it in production.
I do it in production.
And that's not our MO in our day job. So if anyone's thinking that this is the kind of cowboy activity that we would do if it was anything other than you and me chatting. No. So what? How would we, Ben? How would we do this?
How would we do this if it was? Well, so obviously you want to have a separate environment for testing this out. But the trick with creating that separate environment is, how do you know that your separate environment is a copy of the state of the environment that you want to change for real?
Right.
Right? Which has the additional problem of it is, it's going to take you some time to make these changes. And in a large enough organization or in a large enough project, that means that the environment, the production environment, may change while you are working on making the changes, right? So you might be able to make a copy of your production environment as it stands right now.
Yep.
And then make some changes to it, test those changes out. And while you're doing that work, someone else might be doing the same thing and making other infrastructure changes to the main environment.
Yeah.
So when you finish that, you need a mechanism for basically reapplying the changes that you made. It's almost like a fast forward in Git, right? Where you need to reapply the changes that you made on top of the environment as it exists now, not as it existed when you started working on the new thing that you wanted to add. So I feel like the only way to even have a hope of being able to do this is to just automate everything infrastructure as code style with Terraform. Like
have the only thing that pushes any of this stuff to be the main branch of your GitHub repo, so that you've kind of post hoc already merged everything in at the point where things are applied. You kind of get a merge commit queue at that point, right? The only thing that's really making changes to your production deployment is the head of the line, where all of the intermediate branches have to definitionally have been merged in. Otherwise it goes, oh, I'm rejecting you because, you know, you're not at the latest. You know, oh, I have to get it again or whatever. That kind of feel, or are you,
I think it is that. And then being able to sort of rebuild your test environments based on changes that have been actually deployed. So being able to either tear them down and build them again and then reapply the new things that you did, or merge a change in a way that's realistic. Like, you know, it's probably like the order of operations potentially can result in the same environment, where it's like I had some environment and then I applied someone else's change and then I applied my own change. That is representative of what is going to happen in the main environment when you merge your change. Flipping them might not, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you apply yours first and then theirs, like you might get the same thing. Hopefully if Terraform works the way that it says on the tin, but you might not. right? So you have to like think about like how that's all going to get applied. So speaking of Terraform that doesn't work, it said error updating CloudFront distribution.
Right.
The specified SSL certificate doesn't exist, isn't in the US East 1 region, isn't valid, or doesn't include a valid certificate chain.
Okay, well...
So I don't know if we destroyed our other certificate and made a new one, or what just happened
I think you
here.
Do up arrow return and see what it does the second time, because some of these things have disgusting, like, oh, it takes a while at the back end which
especially
is not ideal.
A certificate, right?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go look at the CloudFront distribution.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And see what state it's in right now. It says it's enabled. Can you curl the site real fast and just see if it returns anything?
I can certainly curl it.
If it gives you some sort of weird certificate error.
Hang on a second. www.2scomplementorg, importantly, because that's exactly what we're trying to fix.
Right.
You see, this is why it's a problem for me. This is why we have to fix it, because I'm too lazy to type www or even say it properly. Yeah, no, it's working fine still.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
It probably created the new certificate and was trying to flip
the CloudFront to it,
and it was like, no.
I mean, you've got the console open too, so you can actually have a look in the ACM certificate thingamajig and see if it's there or not. Or,
oh, yeah, good call.
I know. So we've deliberately not shared screens so that I have to ask Ben what he's seeing, mm-hmm. so that you, dear listener, can actually sort of hopefully follow along. I don't know how much anyone will be able to follow on. What we're doing.
Yeah,
here.
I see. Okay. So, yes. So I see four certificates in here. Two of them are 2's complement ones. One is the www one that is issued and in use and eligible for renewal. And another one is without the www, its status is pending validation.
Ah. So,
we may have to wait.
There's usually a DNS validation. That's how these things. Do you have what type of validation did you have? Is it? I mean, this is. It could be that it's. You might have an email right now because it's like, hey, are you really sure this is your certificate?
Oh, interesting.
Mine set up for DNS, which I think because Route 50 whatever monkey is in cahoots with itself, it can basically set its own DNS records and re-query.
Right.
Oh, but there's the problem. Now we've got two. Now we have two problems. We won't be able to use DNS validation because you honestly haven't flipped the flag yet for the real DNS provider to be Amazon.
Yeah, I could copy those things over into the other one, though.
You
right?
certainly could. If it tells you what the challenge is that it's put in the DNS, then you can put them in.
I mean, I could go, if it added it automatically, I could go look, right? I could
that's
go look
true.
In Route 53 and be like, what did you add to this thing?
Yeah, yeah, that's
and
true.
And just copy those over. But yes, I agree with your assessment of the situation here.
Yeah. Which may have been, this rings a bell from the last time we did this. Of like, hey, yeah, this thing might take a while, which won't be good. Won't be good radio of like, yeah, we just have to wait 2 days.
Yeah. So I don't see any new records.
Maybe it's not set up to do it that way. So, I mean, if you look at the ACM, the certificate, does it say why or how to to do that thingamajig?
It says pending validation. Status, number of additional names.
And you don't have an email or something. I can't remember how this works if it's not set that way.
Not that I see.
Just checking my email because some of those addresses you put a little forwarder on. I don't know that it's...
Yeah, nothing in my spam folder real fast just to make sure.
Yeah, I can't help it. I'm going to go and find my certificates.
No.
Certificate manager. Oh, of course, I need to log back in again.
Do this for
your magic penny.
Yeah.
This certificate. I'm just looking at mine, and I can see. Yeah, in use. Yes. Renewal eligibility. Right. Okay. So I can see. Oh no, that's I can see that if I've gone to one of my certificates, and I can see that it has in the sort of more information inside the console itself under the ACM. It's got a list of domains, and it tells me status and renewal. It says type, and then it's got CNAME name and CNAME value, and those are the two things that need to be put into the Route 53.
Oh.
And there's even a button that says create records in Route 53, but you can click.
Oh,
but
well.
Obviously, you don't want to do that because we don't necessarily...
Yeah, right. Okay. I'm going to go into my other registrar doodad.
Right.
And I'm going to go to choosecomplement.org. Why is there? Oh, one. I've got two domain names for choosecompliment.org. One of them is the misspelling.
Right, be very careful. Very careful.
Yes, but I got to make sure. I mean, it's not going to hurt anything if I do the wrong one, but like. Okay.
What? Hurt fewer things if
yeah, so DNS. And then we're going to add a record. And it's going to be a CNAME record.
Which you can copy paste from, thankfully, from the other thing.
Yeah. And then that's
how
be
honestly
that.
How much of software engineering or administration is goes through the clipboard? I mean, it's just
oh my god, so much, so very much. And I'm gonna set the TTL to 5 minutes.
Wonderful.
And I'm gonna add this record, and then I'm gonna do the same thing again for the wildcard.
Yep. Yeah, you've got the two. I can see for each of my domains, I've got two thingies.
And then
of course we have to hope that it notices this within.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, I've got set two of them set here. And it's probably a good sign that I actually had another one for the www certificate that is in here. I can see.
Right.
It.
Okay.
So now there's actually three.
Right.
Right.
There's but these are all like interim things. So like just to sort of recap in case that we are trying to prove to Amazon that we own that domain name. And one of the many ways that we can prove that is to make a change to the DNS records with some magical things that they've given us. These are the CNAME records that we've just been talking about. This allows Amazon to say, we believe you own that domain, and therefore we will issue you a certificate for that domain that says you own the domain and we signed the traffic and all that kind of stuff. Now, this is an interim step because eventually Amazon themselves will be the people that are serving up the domain name, and therefore they can they just know we own it because we've transferred it to them in some capacity. Mm-hmm. But we're not there right now. So as an intermediate step where we want to just be able to test it by getting ourselves a new certificate, we are going to issue the certificate, use your existing DNS to prove that we own it, and then apply that certificate, and then finally we can move things over if we're happy the certificate looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly. Is there a way to poke the AWS certificate manager and say, hey, can you
take another look
range
now?
To target, one ping only, please?
Yeah. One ping only. That's such a good... that's amazing.
I don't know if there is. Maybe I can do this here. I can delete it. I don't think I want to do that. Request?
Yeah. Is that maybe going to make a new one?
I can say that's probably going to
make it. Well, this is where we...
Manage X-free events. Yeah, this might be...
We just wait, 10 minutes for itself.
We just wait.
Well, Compiler Explorer is 67% through doing an update, very excitingly, in another window.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Behind you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Man.
So then we were talking, right, two things we talked about. One, obviously, we sort of briefly mentioned was the idea that in our day job, the way that we do this is that the CI build in main applies the production configuration. And so it's been through all the testing, and there's not like the two people fighting over two independent things changes along the way, because you always are seeing the union of whatever has been merged into the trunk.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But then how do you test it? How do you test a separate like thing? How would we? I mean, so in Compiler Explorer, I have some very hard coded staging and beta, just to deconfuse people. Honestly, I've had this conversation so many times with Americans. They're like, "What beta?" And they're like thinking like egg beaters or like pub boxers. No, not that kind of beta. No, beta. And so those are very special case for me, and they share kind of a lot of infrastructure as well, because at one stage I was trying to save money. Nowadays I think actually this is a false economy, but there are better ways of doing it, or at least there are different ways of doing it, rather than having just some very special hard-coded things that we sort of push things through. And I know you've been involved in a lot of those recently, so do you want to talk a little bit about like some ideas that you've had about how it should be done?
Yeah, I don't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast or not, but we lately have been doing a thing with a data warehouse project that I'm working on where the branch in GitHub represents an environment. So we don't have a production environment. We have a main environment because we have a main branch.
Because the main branch, right? Is that, right. So it's not special case, right. in any way.
It's not special case. There's like a couple of additional protections for deleting things.
Got it.
And that's it.
But right?
Other than that, it's identical to every other branch and identical to every other environment. And so when you create a new branch, it, you know, says, oh, this environment doesn't exist. I guess I need to apply this Terraform. I apply the Terraform every time, so the Terraform just has more work to do this time. And it, you know, spins up all of the infrastructure that this project requires. And it's doing that, obviously, from a fork of the Terraform file that was just in the main branch.
Got it.
And is therefore a copy of the infrastructure that is running in the main environment. So you wind up making an exact copy of whatever the environment was at that time, right?
Right.
And so that will all get created. It will then automatically deploy to that environment. And now you have a completely separate running copy of that system. There's a different URL that you can go to that's got your branch name in it.
Right.
And you can, and you can play around with it. You can test things out. And then as you push changes to that branch, it goes through the exact same process. It applies any Terraform changes if you have them. It deploys the new version of the software that you built. And then you can sort of iterate and continue on working in that. And then when you have something that you're confident is correct, you know, all the tests are passing and maybe you've done some exploratory testing. I think this is especially important with the sort of cloud-based services that you use on some of these projects, because it's very difficult to test them, obviously, like from your workstation, your laptop. So the only real way that you have to test them in any sort of exploratory sense is by using them for real.
Exactly, as we've been doing right now. Except that because we don't have this set up, we are experimenting right. directly in prod, right?
Exactly right. And so once you're confident that your changes work and that all your software works with any other infrastructure changes that you have made, you can atomically merge those things back into the main branch. So your infrastructure changes and your software changes that may be interdependent on each other all get merged into the main environment at the same time. The same sort of Terraform application process that you used in your branch then gets applied to the main branch. Your new software version gets deployed. And if everything goes according to plan, now you've updated your environment while doing so in a way that gave you high confidence that the changes that you were making were actually going to work before you tried to do them.
Right,
for real.
Right. And presumably, like we've discussed before, if it doesn't at that moment in time, the hope is you could just revert that commit to main and it goes back to everything before. As long as Terraform does its job, and as you know, if anyone from HashiCorp is listening, never, I don't distrust it in any way. It's pretty reliable. So you can almost bet the farm on it doing the right thing most of the time.
Yeah. There are going to be some situations in which it can't figure out some path to go from wherever you are. But really, I would say 99 times out of 100, it does exactly what it would expect it to do.
Right.
So if you revert that change in the main environment, it's going to then have a different Terraform configuration, and then Terraform is going to try to change that configuration. You obviously have to be careful of things, and this is why we have a few individual protections in place. If you were to say add an S3 bucket or add a data store or add some other thing, roll that into production, write some data to that data store, and then realize that you had another unrelated problem. If you were to roll that back, it's going to delete your data store right by default.
Yeah.
And so you want some additional protections in there to say like, hey, if you ever try to do this, just don't.
Right.
Right.
Sounds awesome. From my own personal experience, the trickiest part of this is when you start doing refactoring in Terraform and you want to like say, well, I do have 10 running EC2 instances, but they've got terrible names in the Terraform. Mm-hmm. And I want to rename them in Terraform, which means I have to do this unfortunate two-stage thing where I changed the name and I don't want to delete them and recreate them. Mm-hmm. I want them to be this. And there's ways and means inside Terraform of like using state to actually say, okay, I'm renaming this thing in the actual state. And if you go full automated, you don't have the little breathing room to do that, where I'm like, I have to kind of literally call around people and say, okay, I'm doing some like surgery on Terraform. I'm going to rename this thing, which means I have to rename it in the backing store, which is a Terraform command. And then I'm going to change the text file, and then I'm going to do Terraform plan, and it should say no changes needed. I'm like, good, because I didn't really change anything. So I don't know if you've had any experiences with that stuff yet, or do you just say...
I haven't had to go through that process yet.
Right.
Part of it is because, and I think this also is sort of related to another potential trade-off with this approach that I'm talking about, is that your branches can get very expensive.
Yeah. Right?
Like if you have lots of infrastructure that has like a per hour cost to
it. Right, load balancers, for example.
Exactly. then, you know, running a branch can be very expensive.
Right.
And so one sort of side effect that I have kind of seen or felt working on this project is that it leans me toward using more like serverless things and things that can basically scale
to
zero.
Right. So if you have like auto scaling groups, you say, well, they start out at zero and the first request that comes in, unfortunately, it's going to be delayed, but that's fine for this.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Or
exactly.
As you say, Lambda so type things of, or yeah.
Yeah. Lambda type thing. I mean, there's lots of them out there. Right. But it sort of has me using those things more because I know that, you know, we're going to be creating a lot of these branches and we want to be able to iterate. And it's like, yeah, if you use them, you want to scale up to be able to test them. But, you know, if you're not using some particular functionality in a branch because you're testing something else, you don't want to pay for it, right? So, you know, for better or worse, it's sort of like the architectural direction of this project has headed in that way just for cost reasons.
That's really interesting. As I say, like, well, I'm on the extreme end of, like, what Compiler Explorer does, I'm, like, deliberately sharing a whole bunch of things so that I don't pay the cost for the load balancers and the storage or whatever. And the other thing that we deliberately don't bifurcate is the storage of a whole bunch of stuff because we have, you know, 3 terabytes of crap. And, you know, there's no way I'm going to keep deploying that to a new environment every time one gets spun up. And similarly, I want to be able to create a short link in one domain and test that it still works on the old version or the new version and stuff like that, and that's sharing tables behind the scenes. So there's some sort of edge cases with that. But I would also like to be able to say, no, I just want a whole new copy of the whole thing somewhere else so I can make a wholesale test.
And I have the advantage on this project of it's a data warehouse. So one of the things that it is supposed to be really good at is copying data around.
I suppose so.
And so when I want to copy data from one environment into another, turns out we have a lot of great tools for that.
That's part of your MO,
Yeah. So we sort of lucked into that. But otherwise, it would be kind of painful. Like, you'd either have to have a thing where you have, you know, like maybe read permissions into the main environment from any of the branch environments so that you can sort of test things out.
Every time you do that, you're sort of slightly eroding the nice guarantees that you had before about like the isolation of things and whatever.
Right.
But
exactly.
Sometimes you just, this is what, I mean, this is what makes it engineering and not science or art, right? It's like there are trade-offs all the way through this.
Right. And we have had one situation thus far on this project. It's been going for about 6-ish months now, something like that. We've had one situation where a change in a branch environment leaked over into the main environment. And this was because of this thing. We had some data in the main environment that was being reused for testing in the branch environment. And additionally, we had a permission that was set incorrectly, right? And what had happened was basically the system running in the test environment saw this main environment data and said, oh, I need to go disable this object, this thing, this resource. But it was the main resource, right? And it went in and it disabled it in the middle of the day, right? And so it shouldn't have had the permissions to do that, but you know, permissions in AWS and in Terraform can be a little tricky to get correct.
As discussed today, you know, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to get right.
Yeah. It's not like you can write tests for those kinds of things. So you
maybe
just have to sort of like,
I don't know if, I mean, I know they've, because
if there's a testing framework for AWS permissions,
AWS
that would be kind
has
of
a built in permissions thing where you can run what if scenarios, but it's a very much as a service. It would be cool if there was a standalone thing
that
allowed you to sort of write these things where assert, like, given this environment and this user, assert that they would not succeed in deleting this file. That would be pretty cool.
Right.
Maybe something exists.
I guess you could maybe do a thing where you, like, decorate parts of the AWS SDK, and you say, run as if I had this policy, right? And then you could like try to do operations against a basically like a non-existent environment and say, like, you know, you don't have to give me the result, but just tell me what I would have been, would I have been permissioned to perform this action?
The real trick, though, is that it's so incredibly complicated. It's not like there is a policy.
Well, that's true.
You know, the user, the IAM role has a policy, the user has a policy, the machine you're running on has a policy. Then on the receiving end, like, oh, the bucket has a policy that grants anyone with like a name who's, you know, ends in a queue, they're fine. They can write to me and you can do literally anything, right? As well as the other way around. Right. So, I mean, who knows?
How
is our certificate doing?
Let's give it a go
because we're running out of time here and this might be a rambly third part coming where we actually get it to work for reals.
Yep. Okay.
Drum roll.
Certificates. It says it's issued.
Oh.
Let's try running the Terraform.
What a wonderful way to end if we actually. End. We still got more work to do, right? Because we always more work to do.
Uh huh. Yeah. Issued, in use, no. So hopefully that will turn to yes here in a second when we modify our CloudFront distribution, which says it's modifying.
Okay.
So that's cool.
And then has it made the DNS change? Because that's something I've still got open in the terminal. I'm still DNS looking up toscomplement.org to sort of see if they're... Oh, I guess once the CloudFront... Yeah, it has to be after the CloudFront stuff.
Yeah, so I would expect the CloudFront distribution would use the new certificate, but I don't know... I'm trying to remember.
But you haven't put the alias into the DNS.
Yeah, and even if you... let's see here. Actually, no, I think it might. Let me go take a look here.
So I'm still not getting it on that, and I'm talking directly to it, to the DNS that should be serving up these requests. There's no caching going on. So
I don't see it in the console. I'm hopeful that when this Terraform applies that it will actually...
Got it. So the moment it's modifying the CloudFront thing, and presumably because in the new DNS records, you use a var that comes from the the CloudFront domain, that is its unique name. It probably depends upon it, so it's waiting for that to be applied before it does it, even though we know that it would be kind of okay. So, all right, well, CloudFront takes a while.
Oh, crap, no, that's still commented out.
Okay, well, that's quick to apply, though, so we can probably...
I'm going to have to add that.
Yeah, that's all good. And Compiler Explorer is rolled out, which is other good news.
Okay, and then, so that's applying.
Yeah, the CloudFront takes a while as it has to kind of get the okay from all of its geographically diverse regions before it says, Alice, good.
And then my guess is that I'm also going to have to add in a couple of these guys here.
We're so close. I'm actually going to say to the people who I'm supposed to be now meeting that I am not going to be there, most of whom have said they can't make it anyway, so this is fine. Apparently we have a day job as well.
There is that.
I should probably check on the other computer that I'm not being hassled or harangued. Long silence will be cut from the podcast during the edit.
We can do that.
The magic will.
Okay. All right. So that applied. So I'm going to do one more plan for these other Route 53 changes, and then I think
we're at it, and then
getting close. No, I have an undeclared resource. Probably because I spelled whose compliment wrong, would be my guess.
I do that all the time.
Yeah. Well, I put a .com instead of a .org. That'll do it.
That's not really a misspelling, is it? I mean, strictly speaking.
No, it's just wrong. All right, let's do this plan.
Okay, what does the plan say?
So good.
The story so far, that the CloudFront domain is using the new certificate, and now we're about to apply the DNS changes that will be still not used by the internet at large, but will be used by my console that is set up to use Amazon directly.
So yeah, we're creating two. We're removing a Route 53 entry and adding two more.
Oh.
Because one of them. God love.
Oh, what happened?
I think I did a .com somewhere.
Oh really?
Maybe it doesn't. Hopefully after this runs. I just named something .com. It wasn't actually like a domain.
Oh,
name.
Okay, right. It was just the like a variable name, effectively. In
yeah.
All right.
Yes. Okay. We'll, so still running.
We'll make this
but...
look really cool in the edit because it'll just work first mm-hmm. time every time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 60% of the time.
It works 100% of the time. Uh-huh. All right. So we're waiting an application.
Tried to create record set a record, but it already exists.
Oh, did you manually make one before? Or have you duplicated it accidentally in the Terraform and Terraform hasn't noticed its mistake, which is...
I think that is exactly what I did.
Yeah, that's my MO, because like Terraform will go, this looks valid to me, and it'll do the plan, and it said, this is what I'm going to do, and then Amazon turns around and says, no, those are the same thing, you fool. You already got one of those. Uh-huh. I told them we already got one.
Two's confident that it was already declared main TF. Oh, yeah. Is that what this is? Oh, yes. Okay. So I do have in this thing the verification records.
Oh, I just went to just the naked twosconfident.org and that has applied. I can see that it has lots of A records for all of the various different mm-hmm. server. So that is exciteful. We just need www to be the same, which you're working on, presumably.
Yes.
And see, this is one of those examples, incidentally. If you've already created one of those things in the console and you've got it in Terraform as well, which that's one of those things where you adopt an existing, you know, Terraform import. And that's harder to do in an automated environment, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know,
I really feel like you got to be all Terraform or no Terraform. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like living in the middle ground is just...
That's true. But like, you know, you have legacy projects, for example, where you need to do a lot of adopting of what's there. And my usual trick is to write a skeleton of my best guess as to what I think a resource that I already have looks like and then import it and then go plan and then basically copy the inverse of everything it says it's going to do back into the Terraform. It's like, oh, I'm going to delete that. Oh, yeah, add that. All right, what does it say? What does our survey say?
It's saying, try to create resource set, twosconfident.org, a record, but it already exists.
That's because it does already exist now. I can see www.twosconfident.org is also those addresses. So that's good. Good from it's working, but not necessarily good from it's going to work each time we apply, because it thinks there's something there that is...
This is almost certainly something that I'm just like copying wrong here. What in the great googly moogly?
Sometimes when we say stupid things like this, it makes me worry, not worry, it makes me feel sad for you when you have to do the transcription of these because the automatic stuff has got no hope with a lot of these words.
Yeah, true facts. So those two records look right.
And yet it thinks.
And yet.
Did you switch from having one that was managed by. Oh, it should be deleted then. No, I was going to say, did you move from a for each or to a for each from not a for each or stuff like that? Is that potentially the problem? No. I've had that before where it's tried to like create something before it destroyed the old version and they happened to have the same name.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't realize that they were going to stomp over each other, but that doesn't sound like this.
TVO records first name, value, and type. You know, the other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to open this up in some JetBrains tools so that I can get the Terraform plugin to tell me if I've done anything obviously stupid.
But the thing is, Terraform would tell you itself, right? You know, Terraform validate and Terraform itself plan will do at least its side. Usually the problems come when it tries, when the rubber hits the road and it doesn't know, it doesn't properly model what the provider is going to do when it actually applies these things. So it has no idea that those things already exist.
All right, here's what I'm going to do.
Yep.
I'm going to comment out the verification. The two ones that we need are the top level domain and the www.
Yep.
So I'm going to comment out the record for the verification because we've did that manually once already.
And we can always just blast those all away in both the console and here or whatever. Yeah, let's apply this. Let's try and get the closure of knowing that it applies cleanly. And then I think we're pretty much done here.
Yeah.
Did that apply cleanly now? Is that what that,
it's going. It's going. I mean, we'll see. We'll see. But it's trying to do it. 20 seconds left. Stay on target. the console's looking good, though. I got two records. They both point to the cloud.
That's what we wanted to see. I mean, I'm seeing that on my side as well here, so I think we're there.
Yep. And yes, Terraform apply complete.
Then I think we can declare almost complete victory at this point. We don't fully understand why those other records were either there or not there or whatever. Yeah. Maybe Amazon's putting them in automatically as well as you trying to put them in manually or something like that. That would be my guess now because it's managed by them already. So you just leave them out and then Terraform never needs to know they exist, right? And it'll just work.
Final work
for this then is to double check the certificate looks good, which I think it probably must do, and then point the top level domain registrar at AWS, change the DNS records, DNS servers, to be Amazon's ones, and or move the whole thing. It's up to you how you earn
that. No, and then that should.
And then finally, we should bump the TTL back up to something kind to everybody. Right. That's the other last thing that everyone forgets, myself included, is that if you don't need it to be 60 seconds, then it might as well. I mean, who knows if anyone pays attention to these TTLs properly anyway.
Right. Cool.
Well, there we go. We got success. We did it.
We got success.
Hopefully by the time this airs, people will actually be able to go to HTTPS, toscompliment.org, and it will just work.
It'll just work.
Fabulous.
Awesome.
Okay, my friend. Until next time.
Until next time.
You've been listening to Two's Compliment, a programming podcast by Ben Rady and Matt Godbolt. Find the show transcript and notes at www.twoscompliment.org. Contact us on Mastodon. We are at twoscompliment@hackyderm.io. Our theme music is by Inverse Phase. Find out more at inversephase.com.